the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation, here's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Good Monday morning, everyone, and thank you for starting your week off with us. In honor of National Dairy Month, dairy farmers are catching the consumer's eye and hopefully speaking through to their bellies. The Innovation Center for U.S. Dairy has connected dairy farmers with consumers through murals and podcast interviews, including interviews by Oprah Winfrey and Katie Couric. All of that is to make sure that these dairy farmers get their stories across to their consumers. For more information, visit dairy.org. In today's show, Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue and Canada's Agriculture Minister McAlay talked about NAFTA last week. We'll get an update on the process today. AgNet West Brian German talks why educating legislators for ag research funding is so important. And also, there's a stink bug problem that's becoming more of a pest for almond growers. Taylor Hillman has that story coming up in today's show. And starting off today's show, Taylor will also discuss the changes that need to be made to the Senate Farm Bill before it gets voted on.
Neither version of the Farm Bill has included redefining the term rural, and that's frustrating for California. The Senate Farm Bill should be viewed as a very positive thing for California producers, but California Farm Bureau Federal Policy Director Josh Rolfe said one thing remained unchanged in both Farm Bill versions, and it continues to cost California available funding.
Yeah, one thing that is really disappointing, not a big surprise, but disappointing in both the House and Senate bills, is the definition of rural is not changed. There are states that are the size of just one of our counties, and unfortunately, because of our large geographical counties, there is a large population center that disqualifies us from, and disqualifies rural areas in particular, for receiving funds for broadband, funds for water contamination, nitrates, other rural programs. And we were hoping for a new definition in the House bill, didn't get it. Again, in the Senate bill, we were hoping for it, and it's not there either. So that's something we're going to be encouraging our senators Feinstein and Harris, for one of them to introduce an amendment that would address that definition.
UCANR Vice President Glenda Humiston recently talked to AgNet West about this issue.
You know, think about San Bernardino County. It's larger than 9 U.S. states. Yeah. We've got 30 counties larger than a U.S. state. And the formulas USDA uses and has used for decades utilize county boundaries for their formulas. Yeah. And again, it affects allocation of budgets, it affects definitions. Economic Research Service, literally nothing they do is of any use to California.
For example, all of Tulare County would be ruled ineligible for funding because the city of Tulare is over 50,000 in population. Rolfe said Humiston has been very vocal about this issue for a while, and rightfully so.
That's been a real issue. She's been a leader on that issue for a long time, and so we've leaned on her and the UC system to help in this cause. And we'll see how it turns out. But unfortunately, it's not in the current draft of the Senate Ag Committee's bill.
I'm Taylor Hillman for AgNet West Radio Network.
After battling it out in several rounds of negotiations, the world's two largest economies, China and the U.S., could be in a massive trade war, and that's not what ag groups want or need. On Friday, President Donald Trump slammed a 25% tariff on $50 billion worth of Chinese imports, Reuters reported. China responded by saying they'd impose tariffs on approximately 106 U.S. goods, amounting to approximately $50 billion as well. But if they did, Trump then again threatened to place more tariffs totaling in $100 billion of Chinese imports. Jimmy Musnick, president of the National Association of Wheat Growers, said, and quote, adding a 25% tariff on exports to China for U.S. wheat is the last thing that we need during some of the worst economic times in farm country. In a statement, Farmers for Free Trade said, and quote, the imposition of these tariffs is not only a blow to our farmers, it's a win for our competitors. When American soybeans and corn become more expensive, South America wins. When beef becomes more expensive, Australia wins. As this trade war drags on, farmers will rightly question why our competitors are winning while we're losing. And Dennis Slater, president of the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, said tariffs are taxes on American consumers and will put good-paying U.S. manufacturing jobs at risk. And now, here's Brian German.
Beginning next year, the California Department of Food and Agriculture will begin conducting inspections on produce farms in regard to the Food Safety Modernization Act, known as FSMA. In preparation for compliance expectations, CDFA is offering practice FSMA inspections, referred to as on-farm readiness reviews. The readiness reviews are a free and voluntary educational offering in which CDFA will come out to a farm, review the farming practices, and answer any questions related to FSMA. The practice inspections last about 2 hours and will give farmers the opportunity to have one-on-one conversations with produce safety rule experts. All notes and information produced will remain on the farm. However, CDFA inspectors are still required to report egregious food safety conditions that could lead to a public health issue if not immediately corrected. Prior to scheduling a readiness review, the compliance of PSA grower training is required, and it's also recommended that growers schedule a review during harvest periods. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We'll have more of the day's agriculture news in just a moment. And remember, you can always get the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation at our website at www.agnetwest.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. We've got more agriculture news right now.
A group of agricultural researchers recently updated congressional members and staff on the importance of continuing to fund ag research. Associate Professor of Plant Pathology at UC Davis and Regional Director of the Western Plant Diagnostic Network, Neil McRoberts, noted what was discussed at the meeting.
Yeah, I was in Washington last week representing the PDN at a congressional exhibition and reception organized by a group called Supporters of Agricultural Research. The kind of theme of this year's exhibition, and I think this was the second or third one of these things that SOAR had put on, the theme this year was research funded by the USDA NIFA, that's the National Institute for Food and Agriculture, which is one of the main flagship funding programs from the USDA for ag research. I think there were 31 groups there on the evening to meet with lawmakers and give them the chance to quiz us about what we do and why it matters.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
It's a real honor to have you on our own homestead. We're delighted to be here.
Canada's Agriculture Minister Lawrence McAuley and U.S. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue on the McAuley Farm on Prince Edward Island Friday. Both leaders are former dairy farmers, and of course, dairy's one of the bones of contention between the two countries as they continue to try to hammer out a new NAFTA agreement. Perdue telling reporters,
"The U.S.'s ambition is not to dictate to Canada to do away with its supply management system. We do think that we have a request that the supply be managed so that we do not overproduce and depress world milk solid prices in that way."
McAuley's response,
"We have a supply management system that has been good for the farmers. I don't see any big changes in that area at all."
But both Perdue and McAuley said they'd continue to talk. As McAuley put it,
"What I want to do is make sure that our farmers get a fair deal, and Sonny wants to make sure that his farmers get a fair deal."
This is Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
Speakers at the 2018 Animal Agriculture Alliance Stakeholder Summit discussed how the future of animal agriculture could look. Summit speaker Janet Riley, the Senior Vice President of Public Affairs at the North American Meat Institute, spoke specifically about up-and-coming consumer trends.
We're going to continue to see consumers removed from agriculture. That's not going to change. And the big challenge there is not just that they're not informed about agriculture, but that they're more easily misled by activists who would want to show them a video, and they don't have the critical skills to discern what's not accurate because they may not have seen what is accurate. So we really need to be focusing on reaching consumers with accurate information and kind of inoculating them against the activist videos.
It might not pay to rehearse conversations with consumers. Riley explains why.
It's clear that today millennials and younger consumers want really authentic and unrehearsed communication. So that's why that personal connection is so important. We now have a generation of consumers who've been raised on shows like The Daily Show or Stephen Colbert, where they get their news in humorous and entertaining ways. They've been raised on YouTube. So we need to touch them in all those ways. And everything doesn't have to be polished and beautiful with gorgeous music. You know, we need to touch them in authentic ways. I've done a lot of shows in my career. I've been on Dr. Oz, I've been on Martha Stewart, all the networks, but I've never had a reaction like the one I had when I went on the Jon Stewart show and debated Neil Barnard of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. And yeah, I had to play along with some jokes, but it really connected with people. And I was told that, wow, you know, you weren't taking yourself so seriously. You were really showing us something about yourself.
Riley's advice for beef producers is simple.
Don't underestimate your expertise. If you're in animal agriculture, you know more than you think you do, and you know more than most consumers. So be honest, be open, be respectful of their level of knowledge, and if you can't answer a question, don't worry about it. Be honest, but then tell them, I'll get back to you. I know who to ask that question of. I can get you that information, and I'll get back to you and make sure you get back to them.
For the American Angus Association, I'm Bob Cervera.
I don't know how many breeds of cows there are in the world, but I know that the Holstein is the most recognizable. Their black and white markings make them easy to recognize, but it's not their color that distinguishes them. It's their milk. They give more milk than any other breed. Holsteins can be found on 5 continents. In the U.S. and Canada, they outnumber all other breeds. Their milk is preferred by cheesemakers all over the world. They're not called Holsteins everywhere, but it's the same breed anywhere you see them. Holsteins require more care than other breeds of cows, but they are worth it. One other fact, Holsteins have a shorter lifespan than other cows, but the volume of their milk that they yield, again, makes them worth it. And that's Ag Review for today. Everett Griner, AgNet West.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. More agriculture news and farm features are coming up. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. We've got more agriculture news right now.
Many tree nuts are nutrient dense, but compared to other plant-based crops, are high in fat and calories. But USDA researchers like David Baer studied if calories connected to certain types of nuts were less than what was listed on food package labels.
We started out working with pistachios, then we did some research with almonds, and then we did some research with walnuts.
All three nut varieties were found to have less calories on the label versus what was measured in a serving, as much as a 20% differential in the case of almonds and walnuts. Baer says this could provide an explanation why some people don't experience excessive weight gain when eating nuts, even with their high calorie content.
Perhaps it's those healthy fats that are associated with reduced risk for coronary heart disease, those fatty acids that help keep LDL cholesterol, the bad cholesterol, at lower levels.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
When the Centers for Disease Control people issue warnings about something, it's usually worth paying attention to. The CDC has reported that this summer season could be very bad when it comes to ticks. Not from the nuisance angle, though, but
simply because of the diseases that they're able to carry.
Lee Townsend, an extension entomologist with the University of Kentucky.
Ticks are almost a soup of pathogens and microbes in them that can cause problems both for humans and animals.
Problems including death in some cases. There's Lyme disease, of course, but many, many others, dozens of them, and he says it seems every year
we find out even more pathogens that are in them and potentially can cause disease problems.
Problems that may not show up for days, weeks, months after the bite. Townsend says if you're going to be in wooded, shaded areas where there may be tall grass and weeds, wear long sleeves, long pants, keep as little skin exposed as possible, use repellents, and do checks of yourself every hour or so just in case. More about this in a future report. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The right way to harvest and store summer squash from your garden. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. As you check your plants daily, it's best to harvest summer squash, yellow or zucchini, when small and tender, for best flavor. Most varieties average 60 days to maturity and are ready as soon as a week after flowering. It's recommended that you cut the grounds off the vine rather than breaking, twisting, or yanking them off. Use a knife or shears so that the plant is not injured. Fresh summer squash can be stored in the refrigerator for up to 10 days. You could also freeze your squash. Just wash it, cut off the ends, or slice and cube it, blanch it in boiling water for 3 minutes, then immediately immerse in cold water, drain, and allow them to cool and become completely dry. Blanched zucchini or squash can be frozen for up to 14 months, depending on how airtight the seal is. When ready to use, thaw and enjoy within 3 days, but do not attempt to refreeze it. With just a little preparation, your summer squash can be your go-to for fall and winter cooking. I'm Kathy Eisen for AgNet West.
Good day, everybody. Albert J. Hernandez, the Untamed Chef for AgNet West, and welcome to the California Kitchen, where you can learn how to cook from an award-winning chef in under 3 minutes or less. I'm your host with the most. Let's get started. So let's be honest, it's really, really hot out here. And one thing I'm trying to do is give you all some recipes to help you beat the heat a little bit. And there's nothing that beats the heat more than just a nice chilled or cold dessert. And it doesn't have to always be ice cream, but this is my recipe for a chocolate panna cotta. The very first thing we need to do, and this is really, really important. Now, you can bloom gelatin as the gelatin base, and pretty much what it is a cream. It's a sweetened flavored cream or milk, whatever will take onto the gelatin. Now, I like to do it a little bit different. Whenever I'm doing a panna cotta, I like to use agar gel. And what agar gel is going to actually do, it'll do exactly what we're supposed to do as far as blooming gelatin. So if you want to bloom gelatin, we take gelatin sheets, and usually it's about one gelatin sheet if we're going to make panna cotta just for four people. One quart of heavy cream, or I like to do an actual mixture of heavy cream and milk. Whole milk, never 2% or low fat or no fat milk whenever you're doing a panna cotta, because we need that excess fat to actually bring this dish to life right here. So very simply, all I'm going to do is take 2 cups of heavy cream, 2 cups of whole milk. I'm also gonna add to that 1 cup of sugar. Now I know that might sound like a lot, but you have to trust me on this one. It needs to have some kind of a sweet flavor. Otherwise, it's not going to taste like anything at all. It'll taste just like milk. Now, there's so many creative ways you can make a panna cotta, but I like to just use some cocoa powder. And when I'm doing this with cocoa powder, all I'm going to do to this is I'm going to add in about 3 to 4 tablespoons, depending on how much you like chocolate. My son loves chocolate. Me, not the biggest fan of just cocoa powder, but it also makes a lot of sense in this panna cotta. So very, very simply, all we're going to do is we're going to add in the cocoa powder to the mixture, and I like to just whisk that all together. And then once you put that bloomed gelatin in there, you can put it in the fridge and it'll set up. But like I said, I like to use agar gel. So the way agar gel actually works is we need to heat this up to activate the agar gel. So I put this in a sauce pot, I bring it to a light boil, add my agar gel, which is usually about a tablespoon of agar gel. I'm gonna blend it all in there nice and fine. Once it's fully blended in, very, very simply, all I'm going to do is put it into some nice ceramic little cups, or if you have your creme brulee dishes, they work really well. Put it in the fridge, let it set for about 4 to 6 hours overnight is always better. Enjoy immediately. It's an amazing dish. I'm Albert J. Hernandez. You can call me the Untamed Chef for AgNet West.
This is Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. We'll have more of the day's agriculture news in just a moment. And remember, you can always get the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation at our website at www.agnetwest.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City Newsday. I'm Danielle Leal. In today's interview segment, AgNet West, Taylor Hillman talks with the California Farm Bureau Federation about the Senate's version of the Farm Bill. Take a listen.
We're talking to Josh Rolfe today, who's head of federal policy for California Farm Bureau, and the Senate version of the Farm Bill came out. You guys have had some time to look at the language overall. I know you guys liked the House Farm Bill because of some things that didn't get cut. Overall, what do we think so far about the Senate Farm Bill?
Senate Farm Bill, we've had a few days to chew on it and to digest and analyze, and we're really coming away similar to the same impression that was left with the House bill, which is this is overall a very positive bill for agriculture. It has a lot of provisions that we were worried would be either on the chopping block or cut altogether. And I think if you're a California producer of just about any commodity, you're gonna like what's in the Senate bill.
That was one of the things you said before when we talked about the House bill was specialty crops is usually the first to be cut, right?
Yeah, it's a newer program. I mean, in the scheme of things, of the 80-plus year history of Farm Bill, specialty crops was just introduced in the last decade. And so it being so new, there's always the threat that new programs will go away. And instead, I think in large part because of the position Debbie Stabenow, senator from Michigan, has as the ranking Democrat on the committee. She's been a strong proponent of specialty crops and one of the principal authors of that title being added in the 2008 bill. And so her being there, I think, ensured that a lot of the specialty crop programs have been protected.
Now, one of the things you guys wanted to see amended a little bit in the House version was research into mechanization. Now, from what I understand, from what you were telling me, is we see that in this one.
Yeah, in a big way, and in a bigger way than was in the House bill. The House bill has language that reiterates that mechanization is important and is something that should be targeted as a research need when universities are applying for these grant funds. What the Senate does in going further is not only do they have that language that prioritizes mechanization in a few different grant programs, but it also carves out some funding so that those funds will be dedicated to mechanization. And mechanization, for anyone listening, you know, it addresses our labor crisis. We've got to have a short-term look at addressing the current crisis, but we also have to have long-term, and that means looking at perishable crops that currently rely on that human touch for harvest, and mechanization offers that answer in the long-term.
Very good. That's exciting to hear. What else? What are some of the other things you guys do like about this that's a little bit of a change?
Well, we could go title by title, but there's 13 titles, and that may take too long and put everyone to sleep. But Title One in dairy, there's the way that the national program is structured doesn't really help or address California. So that's one unfortunate aspect of the Farm Bill, but also an area we didn't really expect that we would get anything that would change status quo. There are a few tweaks on a dairy donation program that are positive and that we support. Conservation, there are a lot of, the Environmental Quality Incentives Program, or EQIP, is very popular in the state, and we supported and achieved continued mandatory funding in that program. And there's also an area that had a lot of opposition last Farm Bill, and even in this one, that it has to do within EQIP. It's an air quality program to address some of our higher air standards. And so we were able to preserve that program in there. And then on trade, there are trade programs that are still in place, like the market access program, which we support, going through to research and specialty crops, energy, forestry, a lot of really good programs that will stay in place in this Farm Bill, in the Senate version.
Good. Good. And no bill's perfect. There are some things you would like to change. You had this with the House Farm Bill too. What are some of the things you guys are looking at to possibly look at a change before this goes?
Yeah, one thing that is really disappointing, not a big surprise, but disappointing in both the House and Senate bills, is the definition of rural is not changed. There are states that are the size of just one of our counties. And unfortunately, because of our large geographical counties, there is a large population center that disqualifies us from, and disqualifies rural areas in particular, for receiving funds for broadband, funds for water contamination, nitrates, other rural programs. And we were hoping for a new definition in the House bill, didn't get it. Again, in the Senate bill, we were hoping for it, and it's not there either. So that's something we're going to be encouraging our senators, Senators Feinstein and Harris, to for one of them to introduce an amendment that would address that definition.
Yeah, that was a big deal. We talked to UC A&R Glenda Humiston, who said that consistently keeps money from California. That isn't fair when you base it on a county basis instead of census numbers, perhaps.
Yeah, that's been a real issue. She's been a leader on that issue for a long time, and so we've leaned on her and the UC system to help in this cause. And we'll see how it turns out. But unfortunately, it's not in the current draft of the Senate Ag Committee's bill.
One other thing you guys want to see changed is the gross income limit. It was lowered, and that creates kind of a problem here.
It does. The adjusted gross income, or means testing, we can call it, has been introduced over the last 10 years in farm bills. And, you know, there is a lot of abuse by millionaires and people that really aren't in agriculture who come in and they end up getting price supports that they don't otherwise need to sustain the operation. And so this is an issue that the House kept the AGI at its $900,000 cap, and the Senate unfortunately reduces that amount from $900,000 to $700,000. And anyone on the street would say, oh gosh, that's a ton of money. That's almost, it almost makes you a millionaire by income. But there are farmers who bring in well over the $700,000 amount, who live in very modest homes, drive modest cars because they have to. Farming is a risk-based business, and you might have a very good year and then five really bad years. So the AGI limit does not work for California, and that's something we're going to be fighting back on.
Thank you very much for your time, Josh. I appreciate it.
Sure. Anytime. Thanks.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. More agriculture news and farm features are coming up. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. We've got more agriculture news right now.
A stink bug in California that's been here for more than 15 years, primarily in urban areas, is now becoming a bigger issue for agriculture. Populations of the brown marmorated stink bug have become established in the urban portion of 16 California counties and have been trapped in 18 more. Noticeable damage in peach orchards and vineyards started being reported last year, and instances of infestation had seen significant increase this year. The bugs can damage multiple different types of fruits, vegetables, and nuts. Last year around this time, the pest showed up in almond orchards in the northern San Joaquin Valley, and almonds have now been officially listed as a preferred host. Damage and infestation in areas of Stanislaus and Merced counties are already being reported. Brown marmorated stink bug populations can take a while to establish in large numbers, but once they do, they can cause severe losses since even immature stages of the pest can actively feed on fruit. The full extent of what kind of threat the bug poses for nut crops is still unknown. It can also be difficult to identify the pest based on damage to nuts alone, as it can often look very similar to damage caused by other common stink bugs. The bug can be identified by distinct white bands on their antennas. To learn more and see pictures of the bug, you can head to our website at agnetwest.com. I'm Taylor Hillman for Agnet West Radio Network.
There are a wide range of farm-level matters that producers consider when it comes to the long term, including seed varieties, planting strategies, equipment, inputs, even the contour and condition of the land itself. But as Iowa State University plant pathologist Darren Mueller notes, one trend producers are expanding to address long-range farm-level issues is diversification.
A lot of times you're going to get farmers that are going to diversify the maturity group that they put out there, for example. So some of them are going to push a little bit longer maturity groups and maybe go after a little bit more yield, but those are going to be at risk for early frost. Or some farmers are going to adjust, plant. Some are going to get out there and plant as early as they possibly can and hit the seeds with as much seed treatment and protection as they can, while others, they might save some fields that are a little bit wetter or something.
He says this all comes down to a basic premise for producers.
It should be one of the goals of farmers is to be a good steward of the land, but also be a good steward of the technology that's available to them as they're making farming decisions.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
And now here's a recap of one of today's top stories.
A group of agricultural researchers recently updated congressional members and staff on the importance of continuing to fund ag research. Associate Professor of Plant Pathology at UC Davis and Regional Director of the Western Plant Diagnostic Network, Neil McRoberts, noted what was discussed at the meeting.
Yeah, I was in Washington last week representing the AIPDN at a congressional exhibition and reception organized by a group called Supporters of Agricultural Research. The kind of theme of this year's exhibition, and I think this was the second or third one of these things that SOAR had put on, the theme this year was research funded by the USDA NIFA, that's the National Institute for Food and Agriculture, which is one of the main flagship funding programs from the USDA for ag research. I think there were 31 groups there on the evening to meet with lawmakers and give them the chance to quiz us about what we do and why it matters.
I'm Brian German for Agnet West Radio Network.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit Agnet West online at agnetwest.com. You can follow Agnet West on Twitter and Facebook with @AgnetWest. Follow Brian German with @BrianAgnetWest, Danielle Leal with @DLealAgnetWest, and Taylor Hillman with @TheManOfTheHill. This has been Farm City Newsday by Agnet West.